Fresh from the University of Lagos, Ayo Bamibe Teriba landed a role as an intern at Progressive Capital. There, he held several positions, including relationship and fund analyst. Now a venture sourcing lead at Founders Factory Africa, he helps find some of the most promising African startups. In this episode of Equity Merchants, he joins me to discuss the state of investing in Africa, including why fintech startups get the most funding. So, first question is going to be a personal question. Can you just give us some background about who you are? Tell us about yourself.
Right. So, my name is Ayo Bamibe Teriba. I've been working ever since I left uni in November 2017. Okay. And my work for the backup, for the most part of it, has been with Ingressive, or was it Ingressive, but I've been able to just go alongside the business into, you know, the capital part of it. So I started as Ingressive as an analyst, majorly focused on our market entry and like market research arm of the business. Ingressive LLC is a market research organization that open some form of curated experiences and also deep dives for Silicon Valley based funds, where they're trying to expand and include Africa into their trajectory for growth. Just with Ingressive, we've been able to plan over 60 trips, and those trips have brought executives, market leaders, C-suite, research people in different organizations into Africa. We work with the likes of the Black Tokats and the education team on that digital development organization before they got acquired by Microsoft. We also work with Figma, which is a popular tool in Nigeria now for design. We're able to help them with the groundwork in Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa. And we was also host the CEO and their head of expansion into Nigeria. So we've worked with various other organizations, USAID, Omidia, YC, and a couple of tech stars into it, a couple of interesting folks. And you know, just doing that market research and organizing those trips where you create experiences for them to visit ops, they could begin to see the experience of the African tech and the dynamics of our ecosystem, which led to some of them, you know, emulating the Silicon Valley model where, you know, you go around, you see great companies, if it's at the infancy stage, you engage the founders, you get to understand why they're doing what they do. And, you know, in based off conviction and also based off the opportunity, you see, you write your personal check, which is your money, to the organization. So we helped about 50 executives, family houses, to, you know, the entire African expansion strategy, and then they invested money. Aside from money, some of them invested a couple of things. They top did education programs with the Ingressive Campus Ambassador to universities and all this kind of stuff. So that's just to give you a clear picture of like what I did in the first early days. And then from there, in December 2019, I joined Ingressive Capital, which is, you know, an offshoot of Ingressive LLC. I am as an analyst. My part of, you know, job was based on my core strengths, which was, you know, building relationships, engaging founders, getting to know more people in the ecosystem, and then taking the fund closer to the crux of the ecosystem, which is, you know, the ops, the schools, and communities where people are already building ideas. For venture capital was not, you know, was not the most keen word or like attractive was to them, because they really didn't understand the concept of, you know, build, get money, scale, and all those stuff. So we used a bit of that knowledge and whatnot, and then I wrote articles, spoke in different webinars, seminars, schools, just to help people understand the concept. And, you know, excited that all from there to when I left, I was able to participate in about 10 fundraisers for different companies that, you know, engaged in Ingressive and collected money offers. up there too, I was able to also participate and understand how syndicates work. The syndicate in structured priced rounds and led about co-led 2 to 3. A lot of this, you know, initiatives and strategies were based off of the structure, the knowledge, and also the liberal mindset of the leaders of Ingressive. We gave me a good autonomy to be able to learn. And I was also very curious to also use resources that will just at my fingertips to also learn better. But so that's like morphed my journey. And you know, in December 2021, I left Ingressive and joined Founders Factory South Africa, which is Founders Factory Africa, as we to become a lead on the venture Sourcing Angle, which is the arm that engages founders, talks to founders, and you know, get businesses that fit the concept of Founders Factory, which is a suburb of the Founders Factory of like the franchise of Founders Factories across the world, Paris, New York, London, and whatnot. So that was my journey from like day one to day to day.
Okay. All right. So what does your job as a venture sourcing analyst or venture sourcing lead entail?
Right, so I think right now we'll be like venture capitalized into like about 4 arms. Yeah, there are sourcing deals, which is like your first might be like building a thesis, understanding the concept of what do you want to invest in, what do you want to like make money into, and then you raise money, yeah. And then you disburse the money, which is like you invest in founders, and then you engage these founders, nurture them, work alongside them too. For scale to happen and they become attractive for, you know, acquisitions or IPOs or whatever medium that enables you to get returns. And then you disperse the money back to the people that give you the money with returns. So for me, where I work is, you know, they work on the thesis angle. The thesis angle is being worked on by, like, you know, the CCOs, the partners of the fund. What I work on is, I work on that engaging, like finding founders that fit the ideal thesis that the fund was started on, which is here things like, you know, we raise your sector agnostic, we invest across multiple sectors of the ecosystem, we invest in like different arms of the business, across like, you know, retail, e-commerce, whatnot. So a couple of other is like where the concept like sector agnostic, like that's the piece of our fund. But the fund I work with today is not sector agnostic. It's focused on 3 sectors: health tech, agri tech, and fintech. So everything I do, the founders I talk to must be centered or kind of building businesses around those 3 core stuff. So that's where my job comes in, be able to like, you know, that thesis that drives the fund, create that thesis, and then use that thesis to engage founders, work them through the structure of our fund. What do we do? We invest 300K in companies, check and also in services to help these companies scale, work them through the process, align them with, you know, our corporate investors. We are backed by 3 very core corporate investors, and then, you know, help them get them familiarized with our model, and then part, you know, get them into that stage where they are accepted, or, you know, if things don't work quite well, they get accepted, and then we lose part and come back to them. So that's what I do: finding, engaging, maintaining that engagement, and then passing them on to the next team on in the company, which takes it off from there to do something else. That's what venture sourcing does.
Okay. So how do you find these founders? It's probably like a very easy question to answer, but like, how do you find these founders?
So there's really no like one size fits all for like finding founders, because I've worked in a firm where I've seen founders go from university graduates or university undergraduates to becoming founders of companies. So how do I, if I tell you like, okay, 5 founders, when they announce their companies, I might be late already to even finding them. Yeah. 5 founders when, you know, they are, you know, just nurturing this ideology or this kind of product or company. It might be too early, because the thesis that I work with to say, you know, they should have traction, they should have registered their business, they should have, you know, they should have maybe a technical co-founder. So all these things are like it's early, but it's not pre-early. So like we do post-revenue, not pre-revenue. So a lot of these things kind of making that there are a couple of filters you have irrespective of how you are trying to be as early as you can be. So how I find these founders is, you know, first of all, the most potent ways to that I've seen has worked on content has been either referrals or inbound. So inbound based on the fact that some of these founders look through your thesis, they hear some of the case studies of companies you've worked through, your testimonials, and then the approach, like I'm using this amount of money and for this amount for this kind of stuff. Or with referral, which is your friend saw them first by being a friend to their friend that thinks their friend is doing something cool and be like, oh, okay, I like these people, talk to them, I like them. And then they say like, oh, I spoke to these guys, what do you think? Check them out, they're great guys, cool. So the person has put himself on the line to be a bridge. And then a lot of companies have, you know, this where you find where you have like a website and you open your applications out. Your website also applications and people apply and then you filter based on your criteria. And another thing people do is like I do is like I'm also very comfortable with like the news. So I kind of like follow like some news platforms, follow like some structures to be able to see if just doing like an op-ed or maybe the climate change, they're writing about companies that do something new on our side or like pretty interesting in climate change, you pick it up on them. Like for me now, like I saw this earthquake, agri-tech, fintech, you know, looking at companies that do something around maybe like trade lending, SME financing, you know, payments, authentic, different kind of stuff. So those are the kind of trends. So you follow different kind of stuff. And some people are now using like, you know, the partner with syndicate, which are pre-early. Like syndicates most likely coming before a structured fund. So what we do is like sometimes we become parties with those syndicates to be like to pass deal flow. So I mean deal flow is like the bro code in VC, where it's like if you connect people, you believe in like what they're doing like as a fund, you pass them like great companies to check them out. You want them to invest alongside you. So you guys do not just go share the risk, but you also could share the ability to be able to nurture this company into great stuff. So those are like the metrics we use. But now recently we are beginning to see the use case of Scout. So Scout is make people are like they have companies, they have their own businesses they run, but because of the kind of businesses they run, some of them are like maybe payment processors or data aggregators or open like their API players. People that are building on top of them engage them. Like, you know, just imagine the amount of people that build on Paystack, Flutterwave, Mono, OnePipe, and all those things. Those founders see these companies early, they understand what they're trying to do. So they become like a channel for funds to be able to plug in and then engage these companies just at that early stage. So these are the different like mediums and scopes at which we just keep the engagement going to get like great companies in.
All right. Okay. So let's just backtrack a bit. You mentioned you've been working in venture capital one way or the other since you left university in 2017. But you studied history at undergraduate level, and it's not exactly the ideal preparatory ground for someone who wants to get into venture capital. So what will you say helped you to get into venture capital?
Venture capital, it's like it's a role that's got different like essential things that makes the role holistic. So if you see from my industry, this used to be a title that was pretty new called relationships analyst. But like for me, studying history and strategy and stories, I studied history because I wanted to study history, right? And then from there, history was just a base of knowledge for me, which has morphed even like my lifestyle on like and things I also consume. So history to me is just like a body of knowledge. Whatever you want to use the knowledge to, it like it's left to you. So on history, studying history, after history, I morphed into like, you know, I go into technology space. What I did, I think, because it exposed me to a different like food chain of the tech ecosystem, building communities, managing communities, engaging external parties, using experiences for them, being in webinars, getting to know what is now the companies of today when you're just in ideations of like ideas of, oh, these are like the new concept, blockchain, API, products, community, program. So a lot of that was like the base at which I used to to understand the fundamentals of the tech ecosystem. And then I now started applying myself, which was getting to understand like, oh, this is VC. Then I started consuming a lot of content targeted at venture. Started reading a couple of articles, started watching a lot of YouTube videos. Like I would watch MBA classes on YouTube, right? And I would, you know, it was technical, but I would kind of find a way to take out some content there and ask the leaders in the organization, ask friends. I really morphed myself into peer-to-peer education. I said, you know, going to places where people that I know knew more than me in this space were, and, you know, listen to them banter about this stuff, and then, like, you know, start learning terminology, coining the words, and also, you know, fellowships. I did on deck, I did a couple of other fellowships. I tried my hands even at like a startup with my friend. We built the startup in-house. We even almost got acquired, but it broke down at the last minute. So it's like, those things don't really go with history, but if you look at it, really, history is a study of like past experiences, using them to like morph up your mindset in anticipation of like what might be a similar trend in the future. So it's just, so for me, it's like education is just the base. Whatever I do on it is now, like, you know, left to you. My friend, a very close friend, studied guidance and counseling, and now he's like, he's into product and he's really doing well in product. So it's like, tech spaces, it's really not the trajectory of what to study in school, though some of it is technical that helps. It's a lot of like application of like the build of knowledge you are interested in, and then how hard are you ready to go in and learn and apply it. That's what makes it interesting. And then I'm gonna show you that VC also has a body of knowledge to learn. That's why you're finding books like the Nature of Deals. You know, there are also different books on act of making deals. You're finding people do like capsule knowledge. You're finding Dr. Lab around a lot of like interesting like summaries and notes and papers on VCs and how we built the ecosystem. Maya also, you know, has a ton of books she reads and borrows, you know, people to like learn. And then there is like different fellowships, like there is the Newton program, Newton Venture program, where you can also go and then just like curated VC knowledge. And then the MBA classes. So for me, I've not gone through all those like structured like education, but the application of the little I know, and also the first challenge that comes with doing the job, like being on the job and learning, and then like no matter what you know, it's just another opportunity to like know more. So it's like that thirst of knowledge, it's been like I've been able to become comfortable in venture and even help more people understand venture more. I'm still studying history, like still being a graduate of history.
Okay. All right. So my next question is going to be around the amount of funding that comes or that has been coming into the African ecosystem for the past few years. So the trend has always been that fintech startups take home the most money. And there are some people who believe that we have too many fintech startups. And there are others who believe that we are not even scratching the surface. But why do you think other sectors are not getting as much funding as fintech?
Right. So, I mean, it's when you, okay, like now, when you want to start a job, aside from getting your contract letter, the next thing you do is you get an account. Or you get the motivation like you are paid. No matter how good you are, once you start working and the work does not translate to value on your end, which is salaries, compensation, you get disgruntled, right?
Yeah.
An essential thing of like a job is to make sure like you get paid, like you fight to the price of getting paid once you have a job. It's just the same way of people that sell stuff. Once you find, I mean, a capitalist ecosystem, once you find a job to do, and once you find a sale, something to sell, the next thing you are trying to do is you are trying to find a way to get money, to receive payment. Why fintechs are attractive, well-funded, structured is because at the early stage of building an ecosystem, you build a community. Those communities give birth to skill sets. Just because most of those communities become targeted. Instead of say the developer community, designer community, product community, VC community, operations community. Those communities are targeted to give a particular set of like skill sets. Once you have those skill sets, the next thing you want to do is to offer those skill sets for money. FinTech is always important because we are in most of the time the rule of life is 0 and 1. Like you want to get paid, you want to get value for services. So it's essential that we build the rails or the framework that enables people that put in effort or people that sell value to be able to make money back. That's where FinTech becomes important. And it becomes important, and why you're saying is because like we have a big market in Nigeria. Africa is big, but we've not finalized ways to move money seamlessly across board. So till we fine-tune that ways, we will keep trying to make sure like we get a good knack of it. And that's why FinTech companies are much. And the thing is, for you to build those value, it involves investment, which is the money you see. So it's the fact that FinTech in the first 3-4 years that money has been tracked is FinTech at the highest attractive market, is because when you do the aggregate, which is the crop selling or processed food, the person, the farmer in the market is doing the 3 months, 6 months of tilling and planting and harvesting because he wants to sell the crops to make money. So if the farmer does not find a way to sell those crops, he does not have like a way to receive money after selling those crops, how is he going to plant another one? If the health tech person offering health tech value, that does the surgeries and takes care of you and administer drugs, if they sell the first tranche of it, which is their money, and they cannot receive money back, they will not be in existence. So FinTech is just like, it's big a conversation now because the financial market needs activity. It needs to be well-oiled, well-fine-tuned. And we're not there yet. We are beginning to mature, but we have not fundamentally built that, go out, watertight system where you just need to be somewhere, offer value, and then make money, into your pocket at the immediate end. So FinTech is just the real. All other ecosystem like EdTech, AgriTech, HealthTech, Creator Economy, TikTok. Just imagine if there are no ways for people to pay the TikTokers. Do you think that they would have the energy to keep doing what they do? They do it for fun, but that's where they live. So if you see the payment rail that TikTokers use to get paid after, putting their content online. The same thing as YouTubers. YouTubers to go all the way, do food blogging, travel blogging, lifestyle blogging, marriage blogging. At the end, the incentive for them to keep doing those things is that YouTube pays them off that channel. It's the same thing as Uber. The man likes driving, he has a good car, he puts the car on the road. Aside from the fact he's driving for fun, he's driving to survive too. So you need to find a way to pay him. So as you keep building those rails, that moving money becomes seamless, you start seeing people build the value add on it, which you cut across almost all sectors. And those value add will attract capital too for investment, which you start seeing a balance. Now it's lopsided, that's the conversation, right? With time, it becomes balanced. You start seeing other sectors begin to pick up their weight because money is being moved from one point to the other. The value that they bring to the table is being seen. Value is being, moved from there to the final consumer. And then you begin to see they attract more funding to, enable scale happen. Then that lopsidedness begins to balance. And at a point, it begins to become a bit more of a comfortable conversation. But mind you, building is hard, but some parts are harder than the other. And it takes time for you to see the value of things you do. And this value again is the traction, the scale, the revenue, the amount of people using the product. Those things take time in some sectors than the other. Because some things are painkillers, some things are vitamins. Vitamins are good, they make you live a better life, a longer life, but painkillers are essential because if pain is too much, you most times just give up. So over time, you begin to find an equilibrium somewhere, somehow. I don't know what the year is going to be, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know. But as activities happen and we fine tune models, you begin to see that equilibrium. So, I mean, it's good to be worried about the numbers now, like what's happening in the other sectors, ag tech, health tech, clean tech, manufacturing tech, creator economy tech, all this, but with time. As fintech begins to prove its value of the money it has gotten over time, you begin to see other people who begin to come to the table and begin to pick huge, interesting checks. And you're already seeing them already. I mean, in the past 3 days, about 3 health tech companies announced good raises. With time, you're already seeing that a rumored clean tech deal has happened between a UK gov company and a Ghanaian. So, I mean, you begin to see activities that's like a pointer to the value that we are all trying to underline.
Okay. So let's look at valuations now. So beyond when we try to like see how successful are startups or companies in Africa, most of the conversation is always how valuable they are to investors. So you talk about Flutterwave, you talk about Paystack, and you're like, okay, this is the valuation. But beyond valuation, how can we look at the success of these startups? Because like you just said, the success or the impact of these startups is not always going to be very evident. So beyond valuation, how else can we look at the success, or can we analyze the success of startups?
I mean, what you need to know is that valuation is a accumulation of stuff, of different activities happening in a company. Valuation is not a standalone entity. Valuation is a accumulation of things that come together to form a company. That's why you place a value on it. That, okay, based off of the aggregation of this, it's an aggregation. We would underline this to be a comfortable or look alike or close to value of it. So for me, when I think about valuation, I think about revenue multiples, looking at GMV, you're looking at TPV, which is like total process value, you're looking at like revenues, you're looking at like customer, you're looking at like under customer, again, active customer, you're looking at expansion reach, how many places are they, how many markets are they servicing, you're looking at what is being processed, like how is money coming to this business, how is money leaving, you're looking at even the skill sets of the people running the business, the amount of how great their team is. You're also looking at the opportunity and the potential for this business to unlock a bigger value or a bigger potential or a bigger success in the nearest future. So sometimes, there are different comments, so different schools to this valuation. Some people are like, valuation should be a reflection of where the business is. Some people, I believe, like valuation should be a reflection of where the business can be upon unlocking its potential. So for fintechs, which is, you get the valuation of $5 billion, this is this, but do you know that across all the markets in Africa, Flutterwave processes their money? Everywhere Uber goes in Africa, Flutterwave goes with them and processes Uber's money. So think about how much value Uber brings to the table. Think about the amount of markets Uber is in. Think about the amount of drivers in the Uber platform. Then think about the amount of customers that pay Uber. Then look at Flutterwave. So look at that value. So if you're saying Flutterwave is $3 billion, but Flutterwave should be in about 15 to 20 markets now. And they don't just work with Uber alone, they work with airline companies, they work with telcos, they work with even fintechs, they work with a gross amount of companies. They even do points where they offer value, sometimes they offer products, they have like customer facing products apart from B2B products. So that's just throw it away. They're looking at like other companies, they're looking at like Paystack. Like Paystack before the acquisition, which was basically them in Nigeria and Ghana, the amount of businesses they work with, over 60,000 merchants, the strength of those businesses, the value that those businesses pull in the big economy, this tax should be a reflection of that value. So you're looking for most time people look at the valuation of like, why is this company valued at this amount? Well, they're not looking at like, what's the bigger picture? What's the bigger plug-in this company offers to a bigger economy that even is not familiar with you, that with familiar with people that enjoy the tech space. So again, like I said, from another school of thought is, sometimes people believe valuation should be conservative because as a business, right, every VC that gives companies money, aside from the fact that you're working to build a bigger, better, and more progressive ecosystem, the money is gotten from people that invested in these funds for them to get returns. So a lot of times when a company is raising, the company is raising from the point of view of like proving the value that they offer. But then again, investors look like from the point of view, we believe in this company, it's a great organization, but we are also believing that with time, this company would grow to return our money back. Return our money by either getting acquired, be doing a merger, which is again an affirmative acquisition, or an IPO where they go, list on the stock exchange, or a SPAC, which is a special purpose acquisition like vehicle or like special purpose. If you could help me with the definition of SPAC, right? So, at the end, valuation for those people is like, we need these companies to build to be valued across the scale where they are now. So that if somebody that is bigger is coming to buy these companies, it is not a far cry when they hear the amount that is being valued. So that we can be able to, do what we call get liquid like events, like more like liquidity events where mergers are happening, acquisitions are happening, companies are being able to IPO at a particular different markets based on the different criteria. People are getting money in returns, value is being put across both end of the tables, and it's not just one people bringing to the table, like people are also getting money and value back as entities.
Okay. All right, so final question. So sorry. Okay, so we have founders who have to they have to solve problems locally here in Africa, but they also have to make enough money to keep the business afloat, because sometimes you may not always raise capital as soon as you want, but you need to make enough money to keep the business afloat. And then there's the argument that African founders need to start focusing on, or should start looking beyond just building or solving local problems, but building for a global market. So how do you think African founders can build for a global market, especially when we don't have the luxury of having a global experience? So how can African founders build for a global market?
So how the founders can build for a global market is, the perspective cuts across, right? But from a very good context is, first, a lot of founders, even when they raise money from African investors, are raising because they are solving African problems first. So instead of we saying global, Africa is 54 countries, about over a billion people, and then it's the youngest population, youngest continent in the country, where you actually are finding in 2030. By 2030, 2035, you're going to find about 75 to 80% of the working population. No, about 66% of the working population based in this continent. So why are we, why are we fantasized about the global market now when there's a lot of value to be built in the continent? Okay. There's a lot of value that over time aggregates to become a very big substance on the continent in the nearest future, than building for people that actually are built to a scale where they are now building for personal excitement and more like projects that I built. They're essential, but I won't say that. I won't say like they're more like projects that I built, you know, what they feel like doing. Like, you know,
nice to have.
Yeah, like, you know, apart from the fact that we make money off TikTok, TikTok is solving from electricity issues. You know, Africa is solving from, yeah, you know, processing our agriculture, tilling our land. We have about like 70 or 80% of African land is fertile for planting. We still have issues with getting the best crops. The high-tech places for farming. African population is still densely in poverty. And so there are a lot of values that we can build and cut across Africa first, which is what I believe in, which is what a lot of funds are purposely set up for, right? Than we say, like, yeah, fantasizing about the global market where a lot of it is structured, the value is end-to-end already and whatnot. So that's what I am, that's what I am more on. But again, it does not kill, because at the end is, if you can build something from here that is going to scale abroad, why not give it a shot? But I don't think it should be what is going to divert our attention from the main problem we have solved, which is like building things by us for us and can scale around us. And then, like somebody told me, a very good point of note that I took is, there are different ways to make money. Africa must learn the legal way of bringing money into the continent, which is build things that people will pay for. They don't have a choice but to pay for it. So we need to repatriate money to the continent legally. And the best way we can do it is through value. It's true, it's by building products that, you know, across Africa, people can buy it. And across the world, when they want to engage with Africa, they would have to make use of those products and rails. That's what I think. That's my own mindset for building globally. But one thing I'm more concerned about, like, build for something that this new generation, this young population, the next coming generation would find essential, and then they can be able to build off it.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's a refreshing way to look at building for a global market. So you can build something that is valuable to Africans, then there is probably no need for you to bother about building for the whole world. So yeah, I guess that makes sense. All right, so thank you so much for your time. So if a founder is building in the health tech space, and the other spaces that Founders Factory focuses on, how can they reach out to you?
Oh yeah, I mean, my Twitter handle is ayobamiteriba. My email is ayobamigbe.teriba@foundersfactory.co. They can reach out to me via our website. You know, and like, if you apply on our website, you definitely see it. I just, you know, spread out my email. If I found that building great stuff, you know, Pan Africa, you can all like reach out to me over on that space. I'm active on Twitter. I'm active on LinkedIn. So I'll definitely like look through. And again, if you actually like, I also do some interesting work with great syndicate communities like Oak. So if you're building across, you know, for Africa, across all markets, different stuff, I have a good range of also different funds that we co-share deals. So if you're not building just on my own primary value add, which is like airtech, fintech, agritech, and you're building, you know, more across the broader landscape, sure, not still a bad idea to reach out. And then I would kind of also be able to look through to see where it appears off in the big scheme of things.
All right. Okay. That makes sense. All right. Thank you so much for your time. This has been an interesting conversation.
Thank you so much for your time, man. Yeah, super appreciated. Thank you so much.
That's it for today's episode. I hope you learned a thing or two from it. I'll appreciate it if you like, share, and subscribe to this episode. You can also send your questions and comments to podcast@techpoint.africa. Equity Merchant is a production of TechPoint Africa. You can always find out more about what's happening in the African tech ecosystem on our website, techpoint.africa.